Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hi, I'm Paco Romaine.
And I'm George Chen.
And you are listening to Sup Duck.
This is a show you're listening to, a show about documentaries run by two comedians. That's me and Paco. And sometimes we have guests, but sometimes we just talk about documentaries we've seen and tell you whether we like them or not.
That is right. Well, you know, I just watched the Chris Farley documentary on YouTube, which was made by the Biography Channel. And it's really good. It's called Chris Farley, Anything for a Laugh, the full documentary. It's on YouTube. It's free. My friend, who is a gigantic Chris Farley fan, more so than I, actually. Chris Farley's not my favorite SNL player.
Mm-hmm.
I love him. Phil Hartman.
Phil Hartman. Yeah, Phil Hartman's got to be one of the GOAT.
The GOAT. He's the GOAT. The man's the GOAT. He is the goat of all goats. They called him the glue for a reason, because he could help even in the shittiest sketch, he could hold it together. He could make it funny.
How do you feel like? Who do you feel like is? Do you feel like Keenan is a fair modern version of Phil Hartman?
No,
Keenan's been there for the longest at this point, right?
20+ years, I think.
Did he hit 20 SNL? Years? Oh, my God.
I think so.
That's the longest anyone's done it. That's more than Lauren's done it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, he's been there longer than Lauren. No, I mean, Keenan does what Keenan does, and it's brilliant, and he's amazing, but he's not quite the Phil Hartman straight guy. You know, Keenan has a tendency to get big and broad, you know, where I feel like Phil never really did – like big and broad that much.
Phil's definitely more versatile. Like you could definitely say that. Keenan's he's very good at reacting to things. He's one of the best reactors.
Oh yeah, he's brilliant. But like I feel like Phil Hartman was able to do, because I've been in sketches where I had to play kind of a secondary character, and you don't get all the lines, but you still want to have some impact on the sketch. And there was no one better than Phil Hartman to not pull focus from the main characters, but also to be an element,
right,
you know, in the sketch. Mm-hmm. And there's just like no one better than Phil Hartman. I just love his style. I love his he just brought so much like elegance to everything. Kind of like a Aykroyd 2.0, you know?
Yeah, the very elegant Dan Aykroyd. We're always talking about how elegant Dan Aykroyd is.
Yes.
No, but I know what you mean. Yeah, yeah.
Well, people used to talk about how Aykroyd was like a genius. Like he's super smart and he just knew everything. Like the guy knew everything. And I get the same kind of thing from Phil Hartman. It's just like he just seemed like he kind of understood all the elements of comedy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I love Phil Hartman, and I like Chris Farley too. I think though, if for younger people growing up with SNL, let's say you're like in the year 10, 11, 12, 13, watching Chris Farley in the 90s, I think he would have had a bigger impact if I had been younger then.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it was just kind of like, I don't know. He was so broad. It was so big. It's not my favorite kind of comedy, but I certainly like interested in Chris Farley. So I sat and watched this doc, and it's really well made. It's really good. I was really surprised because it doesn't gloss over the drug stuff, you know. It does not like bypass the drug use and the like insane amount of pressure he put on himself and the obvious desire to emulate Belushi, who was his hero, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really well made doc. It's got lots of great footage, and there's like a lot of the scenes are tied together between his three brothers who are in a restaurant and just talking about him as a kid and his love of his dad and always trying to make his dad laugh, you know? So that was really interesting. And I kind of like, I just listened to the Jim Carrey interview on Mark Maron's WTF podcast. And there's so many weird similarities. I wrote the other day on Twitter, I'm like, to be a good comedian, you need one parent that is either physically or mentally hurt. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. you almost had to grow up with at least one parent that was like hurt mentally or physically to be funny, you know, because like a lot of comics were like, watch me dance, you know, like I'll make you laugh, like I am the comic relief, you know. So I feel like Chris had that. And yeah, so if you're a fan of Chris Farley, are you a fan of Chris Farley, George?
I would say I think age-wise demographic-wise, I was very aware of him. That was that era. It's like Sandler, Farley, Spade. Chris Rock's on the early side of that, I think.
Early side, yeah.
But that is definitely
Will Ferrell kind of came in a little later.
That's, well, yeah, Ferrell's, I think, the tail end of all that crew. But yeah, like that's definitely like a peak SNL time for me. I do love, you know, what's his most famous, one of his most famous things, the Matt Foley Van Down by the River.
Oh, yeah.
So classic. But yeah, I'm not generally so into physical comedy. Right. I did like a lot of British comedy, which is very broad also. And has like, there's like sort of like these weird, this weird dichotomy to British comedy, because you think of it as like being like, it's like, oh, kind of drawing room and like clever and witty. And then also just like Benny Hill, right? Just like
the
whole thing, the whole gamut. But
well, even Monty Python did a lot of physical stuff.
Yeah, I was a big Monty Python head, so that would be
same.
Maybe more. But there's not a big fat guy in Monty Python. I just realized that. That's a missing element.
There isn't. There is not. But once in a while, they would put on a fat suit, you know. But no, they didn't have the big fat guy thing, which it might be just uniquely American, you know.
Yeah. No, I'm sure, like, there's, yeah. Farley, we watched that other documentary about Farley that Brett Hodge did.
Yeah,
I'm looking,
Chris Farley.
Yeah, I'm looking at Biography. Biography's got a ton of documentaries that are from Biography.com. I didn't know much about Biography.com. He seems like one of the more 20th century examples on here. It goes
pretty
deep into, like, well, let's talk about Alexander Graham Bell. Or, you know, oh, Confucius. Yeah.
if you go to their website, I mean, their YouTube channel, there's a ton.
Yeah. It's just funny that it's like, oh, like Mark Twain and, you know, Margaret Thatcher. And then like, oh, Chris Farley. Like, there's not a lot of like entertainers on here. But I guess it's like the stuff you get the most actual footage from. Like, if you're going to talk about someone from like the 1600s,
yeah, it's, like, there's no footage. I mean, that's what's cool about yeah, you don't have too many choices. Yeah, that's what's cool about this Chris Farley doc. There's tons of footage from him from Second City, which is pretty awesome to see.
Have you seen anything about Del Close? Have you seen a Del Close documentary? I feel like there's like little Del Close like videos around floating around the internet.
I don't know if I've ever seen a Del Close doc, but I do know like he was just so fucking huge in that, in improv and in the Second City life. You know, Joyce Sloan is like the matriarch of Second City. She was
the producer. That.
Okay. She was the producer of most of their shows. She worked at Second City for years. And when I first moved out here, I dated a girl who's from Chicago. And she's like, you're so funny. And I was like, thank you. And she's like, you should be in Second City. And I was like, I don't know how that would happen. And she's like, my mom's best friend is Joyce Sloan. And if I will like tell her on your behalf, she's like Aunt Joyce, basically. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and she's like, I will just tell her that you should be in Second City and that will probably work. And I was like, no, thanks. It's like another ridiculously stupid move I've made in my long and unstoried comedy career. But but she was like, they called her like, it was Aunt Joyce to her. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, let's not use personal connections. That doesn't happen in the entertainment business.
Right. You're like, I'm going to follow the rules.
Yeah. Yeah. I was so dumb back then, man. So, you know, I don't know if you even know this story, but I got asked by Brillstein and Gray. Do you know Brillstein and Gray?
I know that they are producers, right? That they did a bunch of TV shows. Yeah.
Tons of TV shows and movies. I mean, they are the production company behind Saturday Night Live. They help Bernie Brillstein in 1975 help launch SNL with Lorne Michaels. They did everything. They were the biggest comedy stars in the world. They were their rep. And in 1998 or 99, I got asked if I wanted to be represented by Brillstein and Gray, and I told them no. I was like, I'm an underground guerrilla comedy video making, and I literally said no to them. Wow. And then I was working at Ohm Records at the time in San Francisco, and I was telling my boss this story, and he was like, you should probably reconsider that. They are huge. So I wrote the guy back and I was like, do you have a website that I can go to actually check you guys out? And so he wrote back.
Do they email you? How did they get a hold of you?
They emailed me through my website, because at that time I had a really popular website called Free Dirt Media, and me and my buddies were making comedy videos in 97, 98, 99, when nobody had websites. We had this fully functional. My buddy, David, is a genius, and he helped basically invent Flash animation in the mid-90s.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Here in San Francisco. So our website had Flash animation and moving parts and pop-outs with that you could watch our videos and stuff on. So it looked super professional. And it became kind of popular because we were part of Channel 101. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're going old school now.
Channel 101, that's like, I think, didn't like Dan Harmon come out of Channel 101? Like all
he did, and so, 101. Yeah. So did Tenacious D. That's where Jack Black first got really noticed, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we would send our videos to Channel 101, and we got pretty popular on that, and then it kind of helped our website. Brillstein and Gray, I think, were looking for the new kind of like comedy stars of video, like they were making their own videos. This is way pre-YouTube, years before YouTube. Yeah. And stuff. So they sent through my website, Free Dirt Media, they sent me an email. And I still remember the agent's name. His name was Jay Hanna, J-A-I-H-A-N-N-A, Jay Hanna. And he said, hey, love your videos. Love what you guys are doing. Would you want to be represented by Brillstein and Gray? And I wrote back, no, we're a guerrilla comedy theater.
We're too
thing.
Punk for you.
We're too punk for you. Uh-huh. Yeah. And then my boss, my boss at Ohm Records, his brother ran the Punchline. So Jim Cornette ran the Punchline. My boss was John Cornette. And we went to the Punchline. We would go to the Punchline every Friday night after work and go see like Mitch Hedberg and Dave Attell and Patrice O'Neill and that's how I found out about Brillstein and Gray, because I was telling my boss, his brother sat down with us and heard me say that I just turned down Brillstein and Gray. And he's like, you should probably rethink that. And so then I send them back an email saying, hey, yo, do you have a website? And he goes, if you have to ask, we're not interested about. Yeah. So that was it. Oh. That was basically it. So, yeah.
Oh, my God.
That was the end of that.
This reminds me of a story that I could tell.
Please.
Not quite in the same pocket as that, but I was in high school and there was a contest where the local paper, which is a pretty big paper, I mean, it was a sizable
in
California
San Jose?
City. I grew up, yeah, the Mercury. I'm not just saying it now. They wanted to hire movie critics, like teenage movie critics. And I decided to write a review of a movie I had not seen.
Nice.
And I got it.
And what?
I think they got...
What was the movie?
This is a long time ago. 4 or 5 people, I think, got it. And they're like, we'd love for you to be one of the critics, our teen critics. And I also was a fucking dick and just like, hey, guess what, assholes? I didn't even watch the movie. That's how dumb your fucking movie review session is. And
in
now I'm just like,
face.
And it's like many, many years later, I'm just like, well, I wish I was known for my film opinions the way I am.
Yeah.
We both shot ourselves in the foot for being dumbasses.
In the industry we ended up being in, basically, and loving and everything else. Yeah. Dude, that is so fucking funny.
For no reason. For no reason.
No reason.
When I think about it now, I'm like I didn't – that made no point to anyone.
No point.
Like, did the one person who got to be like, well, this guy is blacklisted forever from the Mercury News.
Yeah.
I'm just like, what – I tried to become a critic for years after that. And I didn't even think about the fact that, like, oh yeah, I would have had a total leg up if I had gone into college with like some press clips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe like
under my belt.
You might have actually. Oh my God, George, that's hilarious.
Restarting. I love it.
Do you have any other giant self-sabotage moments?
You know,
it's because it's very, it's not unique to just creative types, but it's very much a creative type thing to do.
You know, our friend Pete Rojas, who's been on the show, who, you know, started a bunch of tech stuff and, you know, started in Engadget and is in the venture capital world now. Like when he started in Engadget, I was like living in like, you know, a 2-bedroom house with 7 people in Oakland. And he just is like, hey, would you want to like review like tech gadgets? And I was just like, I don't think I know how to do that. I write record reviews. I'm like, right. I totally like, if you're listening, I regret not taking you up on
That's hilarious. You're like, what do I know about tech reviews?
Yeah.
I write music reviews.
I had like a laptop that was very old that I had a cat scratching post. I just sat on my bed, a mattress on the floor, and would like type like in with a 3x5 floppy disk into this computer that was like sitting on a cat scratch post. And just like,
oh my God,
what right do I have to like judge, you know, a BlackBerry in my mind?
Right, right, right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. What right do you have? You would be an imposter. Dude, imposter syndrome is the fucking worst. I don't know why us creative types have that so much, but we all do.
We both did the self-sabotage where, like, it was the opposite of imposter syndrome, or it's like we're the real thing and you're not the real thing to, like, legit people.
Right. Yeah, exactly. How dare you, you and your extremely. And then I do remember going back and watching, because the Larry Sanders Show is one of my all time favorite TV shows. And at the end, it's like produced by Brillstein and Gray or Brillstein and Gray Productions. And I was just like, God damn it.
Yeah, I watched enough TV in the 90s to have no. I would have at least been like, I've seen that logo somewhere. Like,
yeah. Yeah. If you watch, The Sopranos or Larry Sanders Show or SNL, it's like, God damn it. I also did that. I got offered a job at YouTube in 2005 that I turned down because I didn't want to take the BART to San Bruno. That's why. I turned down being a multimillionaire because I was too lazy to take a train.
This is the thing that's insane. Look where we are now. Like, we both have, like, somehow managed to fail through many things and, like, be okay.
That's right. That's why I one time I really did want to write a one-man show about how I got fired to the point where I actually ended up doing what I wanted to do with my life, you know, fired from jobs I hated and probably didn't want to be in anyways. And I was going to call it Fired Up, which is like fired up to the point I finally got to do what I wanted to do. But it took me just way too long to get to that point. But yeah, I know it's kind of odd. Here we are.
Doing what we love. Podcasting on a weekday.
That's right. On a weekday, I should be working, and which brings us back to Chris Farley, because it just seemed like that guy is just like destined. When I found out he died, I was like, of course, you know, of course he did.
Can you picture that guy just like being a guy in your office? Like,
no,
like just like, hey, I brought over the reports he needed.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's like, remember?
Stupid.
I, when I, Yeah, I don't know. I heard a couple great stories from Norm Macdonald about Chris Farley. He and Chris apparently are not, you know, extremely close, but, you know, they work together a lot. And, like, he would tell me just, like, there was no, like, Chris Farley was never not on. He was just always on. Like, that is draining, man.
Yeah.
That will be it. That's enough for the, you're like, you know what? I need a fucking joint, maybe a little heroin, a lot of whiskey to settle down, maybe a couple hookers, you know?
Self-medicating.
So,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Self-medicating. So anyways, the Chris Farley documentary on YouTube, you can check it out. I liked it. I thought
go to YouTube.com. That's where you're going to get that.
The place I should have been working. They wanted me to be the comedy content manager because at
what
that
year
time,
was this?
2005.
So like right when fucking Lazy Sunday happened.
Yeah, exactly. It's literally, people don't remember, but YouTube used to have a front page. And they would have just, it was anytime anyone uploaded a video, it would just end up on the front page in this scroll. And so you could stop a video if you saw it, kind of like TikTok is now, you know? Like, it was just like, this video was just uploaded. This video was just uploaded. So what they wanted to do is have a sidebar where they had curated content. Mm-hmm. And they were going to hire me to be the comedy content manager. So I would just watch comedy videos and then put it into the sidebar of like what to watch kind of thing.
Do you feel like the lesson is just say yes to everything?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Like you don't need to say no to things. You can just be like, I'll get back to you. But that's kind of a soft no in many words.
Right. I think the saying that I like the most is say yes until you can afford to say no. Mm-hmm. You know, just keep saying yes to every opportunity. And I finally did learn that. Like the job I have now, I did not know. I was completely not quite qualified for the job I have now. And I said yes because I was like, I'll learn. I'll figure it out, mm-hmm. you know. And now I've been there for many months. So,
yeah.
Yeah. If you're my boss and you're listening to this, don't listen to this. I was very qualified.
Or donate to our Patreon.
And also donate to our Patreon. Good plug. Donate. Support us on Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/supdocpodcast. And for just $1 a month, you can get quality content like this.
Yeah, for $1 a month, you can hear more about things that we messed up in our own lives than where we're asking you for $1 now.
Oh, man. Yeah. Also, today is the 15th anniversary of one of my all-time favorite, not just documentaries, but films, which is The Devil and Daniel Johnston.
Yeah.
One of my all-time. Yeah.
We were lucky enough to talk to Jeff Furzig a couple months ago. And actually, there's something we got to follow up with him about. We had this little collaborative idea that we can't
do.
Talk about yet, but maybe not it'll yet. Happen now that we're thinking about it. Yeah.
Well, and we were going to talk to him about just like some, like his top favorite docs too. We were just going to sit down and chat with him about like what he loved to have watched. But yeah, he's got a project that's hopefully going to be out soon that we'll have him back. But yeah, The Devil and Daniel Johnston, that's still one of those docs I remember renting. I remember watching and just being like, need to watch that immediately again. That was insane. And yeah, I mean, for people like you and I that were kind of age in the 90s when Daniel Johnston, like, I think he was, in my mind, he was huge, but I guess he wasn't. But, you know, but we were around enough, yeah. You know, to see him.
In certain circles, it's sort of one of those things. Even it's interesting hearing Jeff talk about it because he's like, oh, yeah, in certain circles, he was the shit. Like, it was just known. It's like,
yeah,
people just knew. But, like, forget that how small that world is in general compared to, like, the rest of the world.
I know. Yeah, it is weird because you think just everybody must know. But that's another great thing.
Yeah. Well, like, when a band was, like, big in, like, the 90s, and I was just like, they must be doing great. And I'd be like, you have a regular job? You have an office job? You're not, like, making all this, like, college radio money.
Right, exactly. Have you seen Anvil, the story of Anvil yet?
Yeah, we did an episode on Anvil, actually. Yeah. Oh
we did?
Anvil, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Shit, I'm kind of forgetting now. I'm getting old.
That's a Pfizer shot. You got the shot, you know?
I did.
You got the COVID
brain. I got my second. Got my second shot yesterday, and I am a little dizzy, a little tired. Yesterday I was really like,
you should have recorded yesterday.
Yes. Did we have a guest for Anvil?
No,
just you and I.
We don't.
It was just you and I.
Yeah. Guests.
Who needs guests? You don't drink, but it would be fun to do a episode with just you and I and with some drinks.
Yeah, you getting drunk and me being exactly the same.
Exactly. But it's like, it just reminds me of that beautiful, sweet, sad, harrowing, lovely doc, Anvil, the story of Anvil, because it's the same thing where he's just like, it opens up on him, I think, putting bread into a bread van and talking about trying to get the band back together and going on tour and stuff, you know.
You know, someone who commented on this the other day, I think it was Lori Kilmartin, said like The Wrestler is the best movie about being a comedian. And I'm like, also a noise musician. Like, it is also like
noise music.
Any kind of like, there's so much, like The Wrestler just captures like the bleakness of like life on the road, basically, of being like a starving artist, essentially.
I can't imagine trying to make it and be successful as a noise musician. Like that is, I mean, who can you tell us about that is like,
okay, so
who are the kings of noise music?
I did a little bit of the math on this myself at a certain point, because I was doing this and I was like, I never had really thought about what the bottom line meant. And I kind of like mapped it out. I'm like, okay, that means at the maximum, there is maybe 300, 400 people in the world who care about who you are. And so if you do a tour, that means you're going to hit a city and there might be 5 people that care about who you are.
Right.
You could get a grant, but then you live in America, so probably not. So then the next best thing to getting the things you can aspire to in that world would be maybe I could get a residency somewhere, which that
academia.
My rent is paid and I can produce stuff. A friend of mine who's, I guess, one of the like better known and super prolific noise musicians, he just like bought a house in Ohio and, you know, left LA to can afford to just travel because he owns a house in Ohio and put out records and do whatever.
Who's that?
He does a bunch of different stuff. John Weiss.
John Lease?
Weiss, W-I-E-S-E.
Can we drop in a little?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right here?
Yeah.
Let's drop in some.
Will someone drop in? Essentially,
that was not an actual recording. That
I actually
George's impression.
No. That's from the Pink album. No, I'm pretty sure. Like, I remember talking to John and being like, "Have you thought about applying for residencies?" He's like, "Yeah, I don't know." I'm like, "Yeah, I think that's like probably the next thing you can do."
Right.
If you're not going to become like an act, because it kind of could, you could go kind of like a couple of directions. This is like not what people signed up for. And also, one of our Patreons, Mike Shiflett, probably knows way more about this than me. Also lives in Ohio.
Mike does?
Yeah. But there is like kind of like, you're not going to get streaming money from it. So this is like also like 10 years ago that I was thinking about this the most. And I'm like, you know what? I got to travel around Europe doing this. And I think that is the only real perk beyond just the doing it that you can do. So, or you get into like sound design, which is like Jonathan Snipes is like, you know, does all these scores for like movies like Glitch in the Matrix with Rodney Asher. You know, like if you can sort of dial it into like, I also do sound design, I also do this, but just purely the thing itself. Good luck.
That's so niche that it's, one of my really good friends, Brent Gutzeit, was in a noise band in Chicago, and they actually were they were called Pencil Neck. They were fairly successful, but like even that, like he had to move to Milwaukee just to live somewhere even cheaper.
Yeah.
To keep it up.
I mean, I look at like the streaming numbers for some of these 90s bands and it's like, you were like the thing in like 1996 and it's like 18 listens on Spotify, you know?
Yeah.
It's nuts. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course. That's so weird. So I also watched Last Chance U, which I love. Mm-hmm. Love that doc series, man. And this one's about a basketball team in East LA. That's also another great doc series.
Yeah. We have, again, our Patreon fans are involved in producing that. So, like, that's something we could probably get someone to come on and talk about the production of Last Chance U.
I would love it. This last one was really good. I really enjoyed it. And that's patreon.com/supdocpodcast.
I love that they would just be paying $1 a month to hear us talk to themselves.
Right, exactly. You have to pay to be a guest. It's pay to play here on SupDoc. Did you watch the Billie Eilish doc?
I have not. I don't have Apple Plus. Apple, is it Apple Plus? Everything's a plus now. I don't have Apple TV. I do not have Apple TV. You might have Apple TV.
I do actually have it. I don't get it for free, yeah. But it's only $4.99 a month. It's actually quite cheap, but it's actually not bad, that doc, the Billie Eilish documentary. I don't know anything about her.
Yeah.
I thought for a long time it was a guy from Britain. So, you know, I did like,
yeah.
I didn't know, but it was very, very interesting to watch. Like she and her brother, like talk about like a lo-fi writing duo, you know, like they just chill in his bedroom.
I'm pretty sure I live in the same neighborhood as them. I believe we're kind of adjacent, or the house they grew up in. I know a little bit about the story because I remember when it was coming out, it's like, okay, she's homeschooled. Her brother makes the beats. She's social media friends with all these other like rap people. She kind of has become like the new goth. I feel like between her and Phoebe Bridgers, there's sort of this new goth vibe going on for TikTok goth. She seems like talented and has done some nice stuff with her fame as far as I can see. You knew nothing about this situation. So you kind of follow
zero.
It follows her like kind of blowing up. Is that part of it? It
follows her blowing up. It's like it literally shows her when she gets her first song on KALX in LA.
KXLU probably.
KXLU. Yeah.
Or K Rock. Like, I mean, probably KXLU would be play her before.
Yeah, I think
K-Rock.
That's it had an X in it.
Yeah, it's KXLU. That's a college station at Loyola Marymount. Yeah.
Yeah, and they hear it and they're really excited, up to the point where she plays, big festivals and stuff. And it's really like it's not really about her; it's more about the creative process, which I thought was really cool. Mm-hmm. I thought that was very, very cool. It's really, really awesome to watch, you know. And you see how much her brother is just like seems like some sort of crazy mastermind, you know.
Yeah, he definitely is sort of. I mean, he's making the songwriting money off a lot of that stuff too, right? So like even if he's the producer.
Forefront.
Yeah. So
speaking of which, this is interesting. Well, maybe to you.
Yeah, that's what this podcast is about. It's interesting to George. Let's talk about noise music and
And Daniel Johnson. No, but I was teaching, comedy and commercial voiceover class, and there's a new TikTok video, commercial on, mm-hmm. and I wanted to use it as an example of pace, because mm-hmm. it's like, they're like, you're a tastemaker, a French baker, a difference maker, and I looked it up, because I thought it was a really great, well-produced, and Dan Deacon does the music for it.
Okay.
Like, oh, shit.
That makes
sense.
That's
pretty cool.
Yes.
Like, national TikTok ad. That's good bread.
Dan Deacon is at the cutting edge of everything, basically. I feel like Dan and like my other friend Luke, they're kind of like find themselves at this sort of, what do they say, the intersection of technology and culture. Like that's the thing people say. You gotta be at the intersection of stuff. That reminds me, this is sort of a side thing. I gotta shout out a podcast that I listen to sometimes, which is done by my friends Matt and Holly, called Interdependence. It's like a Patreon podcast, but they throw like, 40 minutes of it up on a public feed. And that is another thing that's sort of at this, they're music people that are also deep in tech stuff. And like Holly is like a Stanford PhD and stuff. And like Matt, like teaches a music industry school. So like they kind of always have really, really interesting guests that are talking about like stuff in that sort of the tech music space. And like they had this whole thing about NFTs, and it's just like, I just gotta kind of hear what they have, because I'm not really getting the whole NFT thing.
Fungible tokens.
Yeah, but like different uses of it, and it's pretty, and it's like they're kind of hanging out with their friends, and they have like really interesting smart friends. So it's a fun podcast to listen to. I don't know how much cool. it overlaps. I mean, I feel like some of our audience would definitely get into it. But yeah, Interdependence. That's my plug. Since I didn't watch any new documentaries since Heaven's Gate, that's the only thing I've.
Well, you saw a glitch, right?
I saw a glitch a while ago, and fingers crossed, we have had Ronnie Escher on the show before. I'd love to have him back. Paco, do you know anything about Glitch in the Matrix?
I do not.
Do you know about simulation theory?
Yes.
Okay, so this is basically a history of simulation theory, kind of through partially the lens of like looking at Philip K. Dick and talking to like a couple of proponents of different forms of simulation theory, and also just like it has a weird true crime angle to it.
And like I like
fascinating
it.
Like there's a lot of animation that was there's a lot of animation. So if you like CGI animation, you're gonna and this topic. It's a perfect fit for the topic, right? Like CGI fits the topic of simulation very well.
Simulation.
So like most of the talking, a lot of the talking head videos are like fully like, you know, CGI over someone talking. Also like Chris Ware is in it, which I would not, I was like, what? And then someone who is like friends of mine who I do not know, but I thought about like maybe reaching out to her if we couldn't get Rodney. Emily Podhast is in it. I don't know if that's how you say her name, but she's like a arts writer, also academic person at Berkeley, but she writes for like The Wire and stuff. So she's in there as well.
Cool.
Do you know anyone who's a big simulation person?
I have a couple friends who are. Yeah. Yeah. I did an interview a couple of years ago with this guy that has a YouTube channel, and he does mostly simulation stuff, you know. Very interesting. Yeah. It's very interesting.
I feel like if we get Ryan Singer back on here, he's going to have something to say about it.
I would think so. Yeah, it would be awesome to get Ryan back.
I feel like, didn't Johnny Pemberton say something about the simulation? Were we talking about the simulation with him?
Oh, I don't remember.
But yeah,
it would not surprise
me. Yeah, it gets into a lot of like sort of, even if you believe some aspects of it, then it's sort of like a bigger question of like, what are ethics in a simulation world, you know?
Right.
Like what, like, just because things might be a simulation doesn't mean you have to be a dick all the time. Like, what, you know, like, they don't have to go hand in hand.
Right.
So I don't know where Rodney sort of indicated that it will be widely available for streaming at some point later in the year. Have no more details than that. But Glitch in the Matrix, yeah, it was at film festivals. I believe it was at Sundance. Yeah, that's my my bullet capsule review of Glitch in the Matrix.
And he and if you want to listen to our episode with Rodney, it was like episode
very
30
early
or something.
Very early.
Yeah, we did the room 237
and the nightmare,
right?
Yeah,
and the nightmare.
Yeah, and right. it's weirdly kind of also. This is almost like a redux of Room 237 in the sense it's like a lot of simulation theory references the Matrix. So there's a lot of like fan theories or just like people using the Matrix as kind of the lexicon of how to talk about simulation theory. I want to say the Wachowskis might be interviewed in this. I'm trying to remember. I think so. Yeah. Because I think.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember. I saw one of the Wachowskis interviewed in. Disclosure, I believe is the name of the film, about trans rights. I think that's the last time I saw her in something. So, Chris Ware also, like an interview with Chris Ware. When do you see an interview with Chris Ware, like a video interview with Chris Ware? I've never.
Yeah. Right.
Are you a Chris Ware fan, by the way?
I don't know much about Chris now. And
yeah, I mean, I would say like, that's someone who thinks about comics similarly to a way a computer programmer might think about a program. Like it's very, it's such clean lines, such clean design. Oh, right. And also just like super, like I remember there being like kind of like flow charts to, I'm like, I've also been really thinking a lot about comics again recently. I don't know why. I'm like, man, I used to love comics. I always thought maybe I'd get involved in comics, and I never have really been part of the comics world.
That's really interesting. I was literally talking to a friend just like 2 hours ago about this same subject matter. I collected a lot of things when I was a kid, but I did not collect comic books, and I read them. I just never collected them, you know? I was never really a DC Marvel kind of guy. I like Mad Magazine and you know, Richie Rich and shit like that, but like...
You liked Richie Rich? Wait, you actually enjoyed Richie Rich, because I've never, like, read a Richie Rich comic.
Richie Rich, Casper.
Okay. Like, I liked... That style. Yeah.
That style, yeah. I liked that kind of shit.
That company.
Garfield. Yeah. Mad Magazine, Cracked. You know, all of those. I enjoyed all of those, but I never really... But I do remember when I worked at the bookstore on Haight Street in San Francisco that we sold Chris Ware's, like, graphic novels.
Yeah. That sounds right. And it's very adjacent to, like, the whole McSweeney's world and that right. stuff as well. I had an alternative comics... I followed alternative comics for a while. But I don't know if that's even what they're called anymore. I don't think that's what they're called anymore. But
graphic novels.
Yeah. I just come in, dip in and out of it. But here's the thing is like what I realized also recently, and this would maybe be another appeal of it for you, is you realize like that's like where a lot of IP for movies and television comes from now.
Right.
Walking Dead came out of
right.
Comics company. Is it Dark
it
Horse
makes
or
sense.
Image? I was thinking about this the other day. I didn't remember whether it was Dark Horse or Image that did. I might be wrong about both of those, but yeah, Walking Dead came out of comics. And
yeah, it was like, it was a series, right? I mean, it was like a graphic novel series.
Yeah, and I believe that Invincible, which is on Amazon at the moment, also mm-hmm. came out of a comic book. It has the feel of a comic book, I believe.
Right.
So
yeah, it's Image Comics. That
yeah,
did,
and they were in did. Berkeley, I think, for a while. Yeah.
Oh, I feel like the Bay Area had like a big comic graphic novel
yeah.
moment.
Yeah. Well, you know? Did you ever go to Comic Relief in Berkeley? This is going to tie into something.
Yes, I have been there. Yeah.
Okay, so the rumor that I always heard when I went there, and there's also like Berkeley has a long alternative comics history. We should do a comics documentary. I realize there is one. That's on Amazon, but the genesis for comic book store guy, I had always heard, was the proprietor of the comic store in Berkeley.
Oh wow,
that's what I
interesting because Groening spent time
in the Bay Area.
In the Bay Area,
I think so, or to the point where it's like that was such like yeah, because he did like Life in Hell, and he had right. a syndicated cartoonist, and so it's a small enough world people knew. That world.
Right.
So that's the rumor I always heard. I bet there's people in comic stores all over the country, though, that are like, you know, that's based on me.
It's probably. I mean, it is an archetype for sure.
Yeah.
Worst episode of SupDoc ever.
the least awesome. Amount of documentary yeah. content ever in this.
Well, we just wanted to start like something new. So I got my new computer, finally got some recording stuff to work.
Yeah,
so hopefully we'll be doing this more often where you and I just have a chat.
Bearing our souls about the failures of show business.
That's right. I mean, If you don't talk about the failures of show business, you don't really have much because the successes of show business take up about 5 minutes for most people, you know?
Good point. That's also like, you talk to anyone who you think is successful and they've got their version of those stories as well. That's the thing I kind of realized at a certain point. I'm like, I can talk to someone like, oh yeah, I got cut out of that movie. I'm like, what? You know, like there's always
yeah.
that story.
I know, always. And even like I said, I was listening to the Jim Carrey WTF, and he left L.A. for 2 years and went back to Canada and worked as a janitor because he didn't get passed at the Comedy Store because he had a bad set and was like, you know, maybe I need to go rethink things. So
Well, Jim Carrey still was like on TV when he was like in his mid early 20s, right? Like,
I think he was 21 when he was on in Living Color.
Yeah, he was in this other show where he played speaking of cartoons, he played an animator. I remember watching that show. Yeah, I do not remember the name of the show, but it's like, he drew like cartoon ducks and he was kind of like, oh, he's the center of the show. It's kind of like a, a sitcom, but it was like, I think shot on film even. I think it's one of the really, I'm going to dig it up and I'm going to throw it in the show notes.
Yeah.
But I also like, that's like, I was like, when people get successful in middle age, that's always like, those are like the best people.
Yeah, those are the best.
Because they appreciate it.
They do.
Hint, hint. You, the two of us.
Right. Jack.
We will totally appreciate whatever you bone you throw at us.
On that, let's say goodbye. So, watch Docs. Let us know what you think. Hit us up at supdocpodcast@gmail.com. Support us on Patreon. Hit us up on Twitter and Instagram. Let us know what you're listening to. Let us know who, what docs we should be talking about, and if you have any guest ideas and all that.
Offer Paco a job. One of three jobs he could be having.
Offer me a job that I can turn down in a very dickish way. But George, this was awesome. So I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you later.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding in your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.